All right, certainly great to be with you here this evening. This has been a bit of a whirlwind trip for us. We're on the tail end of it. We've got 1 week to go, but this is the last congregation that we're having to report to. And very, very thankful and grateful to be able to come here and do just that. And thankful for the kind words of Jimmy. We enjoyed having him with us. We almost killed him. I think he got a stomach bug that almost did him over, but we were glad to meet with him, and he helped us out a lot over there, and I'm glad for the association that we've had with this congregation through Jimmy. As you can tell, we do speak a little bit funny in New Zealand, and we have a few funky terms and phrases that you can see on the board there. I'm not going to take too much time going through them tonight, but hopefully you've picked up on one or two of them. It might help you as we go through this presentation, and if we get to talk with you later on, you might be able to understand us that little bit extra. What I really want to do is, while you are gathered here tonight, is to imitate a little bit of what Paul and his co-workers would do as they went out preaching and teaching and sharing God's word. Paul would come back and gather his home congregation in Antioch together, and he would share with them the good things God had been able to do through him and his co-workers. Well, I want to do a little bit of that tonight, while you are gathered here this evening, to share with you some of the good things that God has done through us in Pāmi, in our work there with the church. This is the map of our country and our location in the world. You'll see here this red circle shows you where we are located. We're about 1,100 miles east of Australia. And if you were to jump on a plane and fly from the top of the country all the way to LA, that's around about a 12 to 13 hour trip. Now, when we left to come here, we flew from Wellington to Brisbane, Australia, to LA, to Atlanta, and then drove up to Cleveland, Tennessee. And that worked out to be around about a 30-hour day for us as we traveled over. In about a week's time, we'll be doing it all over again as we return back home. But New Zealand is comprised of two main islands. We have the North Island and the South Island. The capital city is Wellington, which is at the bottom of the North Island right here. And Palmerston North, where we live and work with the church, is about a quarter of the way up the North Island, right there where the red dot is located. And New Zealand has a population of 4.6 million people. New Zealand is a very beautiful country. We have a lot of picturesque locations, and we have a little bit of everything. We've got mountains, we've got forests, we've got rivers and lakes, we've got areas you can ski, areas you can hike. And in New Zealand, we have no snakes, no poisonous spiders, no skunks, nothing else is going to eat you alive. It's pretty safe in New Zealand if you want to do outdoor activities. But a lot of people call New Zealand God Zone, because they believe that God spent a little bit of extra attention when he made our place look pretty. We have several native animals in New Zealand, most of which are birds. And you can see up here is the kiwi. And the kiwi is our national mascot. New Zealanders are often called kiwis. As you can see there, one of the more notable aspects of the kiwi is the egg, which is around about a third of the size of the mother kiwi. And male kiwis can often be seen praying prayers of thanks to the Lord that they are males and don't have to deal with an egg that size. But you also have a green parrot called the kea. You have the yellow-eyed penguin, or hoiho, in the Māori language. And then we have the tui and the pukeko. We have some other native animals as well. We've got a native snail, the Coley snail. We have the Hector dolphin. We have a lizard called the tuatara. We've got a couple of species of native bat. And we also see that that bad boy in the corner there of the grasshopper family is called a wetter. And they can be kind of grumpy, and they've got sharp spines on their legs that they can get you with. Doesn't really hurt you too bad, but it gives you a little bit of a shock. And when you find them in your gum boot or your rain boot every now and then, it makes your foot come out pretty quick. New Zealand is known for its farming and its produce. We can grow pretty much anything subtropical in New Zealand. Most likely, if you go to your local supermarket, you might find some of our New Zealand apples on your shelves there. We're also well known for our dairy industry. And so we produce a lot of milk and butter and cheese that we will export to other countries. We're also well known for our sheep industry, and so we produce a lot of wool, a lot of lamb's meat that we will export to other places as well. We're becoming more and more well known for our honey, particularly the Manuka honey, which comes from the flower of the Manuka tree. And it is a honey that is very healthful. It's got some very good properties within it that help to promote a good digestion. You can rub it on your rashes on your skin and it'll help them to disappear. And as Jimmy mentioned, my brother Todd is a beekeeper. And he likes to say that honey is the only biblical breakfast spread. And so if you want to be holy and righteous, you've got to have honey on your toast tomorrow morning for breakfast. We also have a number of New Zealanders that are quite famous. Probably the most famous New Zealander is Sir Edmund Hillary. And he, along with his Sherpa, Tenzing Norgay, they were the first to ever climb Mount Everest, the highest peak in the world. Beside him on the screen is a lady by the name of Kate Shepherd. She was a suffragette. That meant that she did a lot of work for women's rights in our country. And through her labours, we were, I think, the first country in the world to allow a woman to vote during our elections. And then also on the top of the screen there is Ernest Rutherford. Now, believe it or not, it was a New Zealander that split the atom, or was the first one to do it. And Rutherford also discovered the proton and named it. He led the research that discovered the neutron and named it as well. Then we have Bill Hamilton. He was a developer of the jet engine, or the jet boat engine. And even though he didn't invent it, but he developed it to such a degree that it was way more user-friendly to those who were in that boating industry. Then on the bottom line, we have Colin Murdoch. He invented the tranquilizer gun. And he also, those of you who are maybe diabetics or use those plastic disposable syringes will appreciate his work because he invented those. And so he had a lot of help. He helped a lot of those who were needing that essential tool. And then we have several famous sports individuals. Rugby is our national sport. Some of you might have been keeping up with the Rugby World Cup lately. The final will be on next weekend, Australia versus New Zealand. Hopefully we'll win that. But we also have a variety of other sports that we're quite good at. And Valerie Adams is the current and four-time world champion in shot put. She's also the current and two-time Olympic champion. And she went through 50 competitions, world competitions, without being beat until just recently that she's done some damage to her shoulder. But hopefully she'll be back on track soon. Those of you who might have seen the Hobbit movies and the Lord of the Rings movies, they were made in New Zealand. Peter Jackson was the writer, director, and producer of those movies. These are four of our major cities in the country. We have the city of Auckland, which is located near the top of the North Island. It's our most populated city. A third of our population live in that small area of the North Island. And then Wellington is our capital city, which I mentioned earlier. That's located round about the bottom of the North Island. Both Rachel and I were born and raised initially in Wellington. About halfway down the South Island, you have Christchurch. That used to be the third most populated city. In recent years, it's undergone several earthquakes. Several hundred people died, and so a lot of people have moved out from there. And a lot of the buildings that you see in the picture are no longer there. They didn't last the earthquakes, and so it's very much in a rebuilding stage. Queenstown is located near the bottom of the South Island. It is very much a tourist mecca of the country. A lot of people will go to Queenstown to ski and to various water sports, mountain climbing and other adventure activities. It's a very beautiful part of the country. And that brings us to Palmerston North itself. Palmerston North is a city of around about 80,000 people. We are noted for the wind turbines that you see there. And these are the wind turbines, and they're located on the hills and ranges back here. They produce about 20 or 30,000 homes worth of power throughout a year. We also have a university in Palmerston North called Massey University, and a lot of people who are going to go into the farming sector or veterinary kind of work will go to Massey University to learn their trade. We have tried to get a foot in the door there as far as the church is concerned, but those who are in the powers to be in the religious part of side of things on campus, because we won't be part of the local denominational ministerial alliance, they're a bit reluctant to welcome us on campus. But hopefully, sometime in the future, we'll be able to get in there, maybe some kind of backdoor way to have a presence on campus. This is our meeting place. Of course, this is where we will meet for worship and Bible classes and other activities. And you'll see here, this is our main auditorium. And, of course, this is where we will meet for our worship gatherings, our adult Bible classes. And you can only see a small part of it, but this here is, we call it the house, but it has our kids' classrooms, it has an office, it's got a kitchen and an area where we will gather for meals and other fun activities. And this, of course, is our auditorium, and Jimmy has spoken from about that point when he came to visit us. What I want to do now is to focus on the external part of our labours in Palmerston North. And I want to share with you some of the evangelistic approaches that we utilise in New Zealand. And, you know, we're trying to be obedient to what we call the Great Commission. You can see one rendition of it there in Mark 16, that, you know, we want to get the gospel out to every creature, to every creation, to all the people who are there, and making disciples of individuals. And so that applies just as much here in Athens, Alabama, as it does in Palmerston North, New Zealand. And so really we all need to be obedient to this, to let our light shine, to get the message out into our various communities. And so hopefully this will be maybe a motivation to you guys here as well. One of the things that we try to do as regularly as we can is letterbox. This is where we go from house to house, and we will put invitations and information and tracts and pamphlets, etc., into people's letterboxes. You might call it mailboxing, I guess. Then again, I know that you have some issues of being able to do that over in this country. It might be illegal for you to do that. In New Zealand, it's perfectly legal. And we can do this as often as we like, pretty much with whatever we like. And in the last 3 or 4 years, we have delivered around about 29,000 pieces of material throughout the country. By the way, I would encourage you, those are my two boys out there doing this letterboxing, I would encourage you, get your kids involved in evangelism early. If you develop within your kids a desire for evangelism when they are young, they'll have a desire for evangelism, hopefully, when they are old as well. Something else that we try to do on a regular basis is door knocking. And I realise when you say the words door knocking, it's almost like, oh, it's a dirty word. People don't like door knocking. They mumble and they grumble, oh, yeah, it doesn't work. We tried it once and the results just didn't come, and we're never going to do that again. Well, you know, we say don't knock it till you've really tried it. Don't knock it till you've really tried it. Okay, anyway. Well, we do this on a... We think that this is a very valid and probably a very neglected form of evangelism. And I'm very pro door knocking for several reasons, perhaps foremost of which I probably wouldn't be standing before you today if it wasn't for door knocking. There was an American campaign group that came over to New Zealand in the early 70s. that walked up my grandparents' dark pathway, knocked on their door, and invited them to consider spiritual things. They eventually became Christians. Through them, their daughter-in-law, my mother, became a Christian. A few years later, my father, their son, became a Christian. Both of my brothers are Christians, and so I'm standing before you today as a Christian because someone bothered to come and knock on my grandparents' door. And most likely I wouldn't be a Christian if it wasn't for that. And so you can understand why I am very pro-door knocking. But I think there's also another reason to be pro-door knocking. It's scriptural. In Acts chapter 5, we see that the apostles and the early church went from house to house preaching and teaching Jesus. And so it's a biblical approach of evangelism. And it's an approach that I think we ought to utilize perhaps more than we do. And it's one of these approaches that I think that you have to do it more than once. You have to till the soil on numerous occasions to find people at the door. And I think that we meet people door knocking that we would probably never meet in any other way. You're not going to meet them at the workplace. You're not going to meet them in your family pursuits or on the sports field. You're going to meet these people generally in this kind of way. So we're very pro-door knocking. One of the things that we have really tried to increase in Palmy is our benevolent outreach. And we provide grocery bags for those who are needing assistance in that area. We will help out those who may be sick or have had new babies. Our brethren will let us know, hey, one of my family members or friends is doing poorly, could do with some help in this area. And so we'll take around some meals to help them out. We'll offer respite care to new mothers. In New Zealand, there are a lot of solo mums out there. And sometimes they could just use a bit of a break. And so our ladies will go and sit in their homes and take care of their kids and do a bit of babysitting, might help out with a bit of folding the laundry, cooking the meal, a bit of other housework. Just so the mum can go and have a nap or go do some quiet shopping. Mums out there, you'll know what I mean by quiet shopping. And they really enjoy that help and just a bit of a rest and a break. One of the things that we did a year or so ago, and our youth were really involved in this, was putting together care packages for the local cancer patients in the cancer ward. And they put together these packages of just nice things for them to be able to have and to see. And they really, really appreciated it. And we got some wonderful feedback. We got cards, we got letters, we got phone messages of the patients who were just really thankful that we were going to take note of them in that way. We try to have two or three gospel meetings or Bible seminars throughout a year on different topics from guest speakers who have a particular of knowledge in a particular field. In the top screen, off top of the screen there, you'll see a man. His name is Ron Green. He is from No Trees, Texas. Apparently they have no trees in No Trees, Texas, literally. And he's actually a professor at Massey University. We're hoping that maybe through him we can sort of get our toe in the door there. But anyway, he's in the veterinary sector of the campus, and so he obviously has a good science background. And so we asked him to do a seminar on creation versus evolution. Just below him is a picture of a letterboxing card that we delivered throughout the city promoting an event that we had on Mormonism. And the man in the small box down there, his name is Nathan Franson. He was actually brought up in Mormonism. He came out from it and became a member of the church, and now he does seminars on Mormonism versus the Bible. And he came to New Zealand and he presented a seminar on that topic in Palmerston North, to which we invited the community. Perhaps one of our most successful community-invited events was when we had Willie Franklin come our way. Some of you might be familiar with Willie Franklin. He was an ex-NFL player. He came to the Lord and is now a prolific evangelist. He is a very enthusiastic speaker, and we were privileged to have him come our way. And for that gathering, we had about 24 people from the community, almost about two dozen visitors came from the community to hear him speak that night. And This picture here doesn't quite do it justice. All of the kids that we had come along with them, we had a separate class for them during our midweek class, and so a lot of our visiting kids came over and heard some good teaching during that night as well. But that was a very successful meeting for us. Now, our most intensive aspect of our outreach comes in the form of campaigns. During campaigns, we will go generally about 2 weeks, and each day we're out just full-on door-knocking each day. And we really try to get the congregation to support these campaigns and to get to participate in them. We will invite brethren from all over the country and from other places to assist us in these intensive times of outreach. We've had students come from Freed Hardman to help us out on occasion. At the beginning part of this year, at the end of last week of February, first week of March, we had a campaign that ran for 2 weeks, and we had visitors from other congregations. We had visitors from Australia. We had a couple of families, parents who were visiting their children in America that took off their visiting time to come and work during the campaign with us. And we really appreciate the outside help that comes our way. And we would love for you to come our way. Each congregation that we have met with of our supporters, we've encouraged them to maybe to send a representative or two. Maybe during one of our campaigns, that they can see our work firsthand, that they can participate in a practical way. And not only that, not only do you help us out, but you help yourself out. I'm convinced that one of the best ways that you will grow spiritually, short of your own personal Bible study, is to work on a door-knocking campaign. When you've got to knock on someone's door and speak to a complete stranger and try to convince them of spiritual things, you can't help but to grow. And you also build a wonderful camaraderie with those that you work with during a campaign. I think in no other pursuit, there's a closeness that you develop with your fellow soldiers out in the trenches, so to speak, that you can't really get in any other area of Christian service. And so we would love for you to come our way. And if that sounds appealing to you, please give me your email address or contact details, and I will let you know when our next one is coming. Most likely in 2017, February or March 2017, we're going to have our next major campaign. And if that sounds like you, give me your details and I will let you know when it's coming. Now, we also realise that it can be difficult to come halfway around the world, but maybe if you're going to have a campaign here or a neighbouring congregation is going to have a campaign, I would encourage you to participate in it. Like I said, not only will you help out that congregation, you will grow immensely yourself. Now, whatever evangelistic approaches that you utilise, your end goal ought to be to get people into the Scriptures. Romans 1 and verse 16 tells us that it's the gospel that is God's power for salvation. You know, the power for salvation doesn't reside within ourselves. It doesn't depend on us. And so we need to be getting people into the Word where they're going to hear that message. Romans 10 and verse 17, as on the screen. You know, faith comes by hearing, and hearing by God's Word. And so whenever we're having evangelistic conversations with our family, our friends, our workmates, we need to be engineering that conversation and leading that conversation into God's Word. Hey, that's a great question. The Bible has an answer for that. You're looking for spiritual guidance? Well, let's have a study of God's Word to see how it will guide you. And so that's where we need to be steering our conversations towards. I always recommend that people will use a Bible study tool when you are studying with someone. Yes, you can just plonk the Bible down there and kind of start in Genesis and work your way down, but you tend to get bogged down once you get to Leviticus and all the laws and the genealogies and all that kind of stuff. And well, I think it's good that if you have a systematic guide, you can show someone's God's will for their life in a very clear-cut, systematic way. And so I developed a tool for my own work called the Seed for Truth Seekers. I kind of looked at some of the other Bible study tools that are out there, and I kind of took some of their good ideas, added some of my own ideas, and put together this tool for my work. Basically, there are four studies that are in it. And in the first study, we go and try to establish what our guide is spiritually, what our spiritual authority ought to be. And of course, we're trying to establish that the Bible is God's inspired word, and then that it's the New Testament that is our final authority for spiritual matters today. From there, we move on to showing that Jesus is the only way for salvation, and why we ought to listen and obey his commands. And then that first study finishes off by showing that there is only one church, one body that Jesus has established. Well, once we've established that there is only one body, we need to identify what that body is. When you go out your back door here, and you'll see that there's a variety of different religious bodies out there, how do we know which is the right one? And so what we do in the next two studies is to show the identifying characteristics of the Church of the Bible. And so in the second study, we'll look at the identifying characteristic of worship. How did the Church of the Bible worship? And then we'll look at the leadership structure of the Church of the Bible. And then in the third study, on the blue sheet there, we will look at the identifying characteristic of the names that we ought to wear as individuals within the body, and then names that we ought to wear as collective groups of the body. And the end of that study goes into the identifying characteristic of the plan of salvation that the Church of the Bible believed, taught, and practiced. And of course, what we're trying to do is to show people, hey, this is what you believe now. Compare it to what the Bible teaches on these crucial matters. Compare what your current group that you are meeting with, how it stacks up with the Church of the Bible. By the end of that third study, hopefully a person has come to the point where, hey, I need to obey the gospel. Now, in New Zealand, what we don't do is to, when someone says, hey, I want to be baptized, we don't just rush them into the baptistry as quickly as we can. What we have found is that the quicker someone is baptized, the quicker they go out the door and they quit. And so prior to someone's baptism, we'll spend a few hours going through a study that we call counting the cost. And I believe this is a biblical approach. Jesus always, with his disciples, he would speak to them and say, hey, you need to think about this. Before you become my disciple, there are things that you need to be aware of. They needed to count the cost. And so we will go through a brief overview of the previous studies, but we'll also let an individual know what's going to be expected of them when they become a Christian. They need to be aware that they are making a lifelong commitment to the choice that they are about to make. They need to be aware that the Christian life is not always easy. There's going to be persecutions. There's going to be temptations. There might be some family struggles. There may be friendship battles that come along as a result of that choice. People need to be aware of that. Now, we don't want to just sort of preach a message of doom and gloom and kind of talk people out of their decision. And so we'll also mention that, you know, despite the difficulties of the Christian life, it is worth it. And the rewards of the Christian life, the rewards of heaven, will make any difficulty that you might have to face as a Christian worth it. By the way, if that tool sounds like something that you would like to utilize and try in your own personal outreach, again, give me your email and I will send you a digital copy of it, and you can use it as you wish. We do have some other Bible study tools that we utilize. Sometimes when you're studying the Bible with someone, questions will come up or topics of interest will be broached that you need to create a new study with, a new study to be able to share with them. And so sometimes at the beginning of a study, someone will show that, hey, I believe in God, but I'm not fully convinced that the Bible is his inspired word. And so we have a variety of studies that we have put together that deal with that. I've got one up here on archaeology and the Bible, which establishes the historical accuracy that we find within the scriptures. We've got other studies that deal with the scientific foreknowledge within the Bible, the medical accuracy within the Bible, the prophetic nature of the Bible, all of which show that the Bible is God's inspired word. There was a man who was a Seventh-day Adventist that I was studying with, and I created a tool there that showed that the first day of the week is our special day that we ought to recognize in Christianity. There was a lady who was reached during our recent campaign who brought up the topic of the sinfulness of babies. Well, I put together a study tool showing that original sin is not a biblical concept. And so these are a variety of study tools that we utilize in our work in Palmerston North. We also offer Bible correspondence courses. In my opinion, they're not that effective in New Zealand. Most people don't really go beyond the first one or two studies and then they quit. I prefer that the face-to-face one-on-one studies. But if people ask for them, we will provide them. Now, the ultimate result that we all like to see is that someone comes to the obedience of faith. Not that they just come to faith, but they obey the faith. That is crucial. And it was Paul's goal that he mentioned in Romans 1 and verse 5, and in his work, he repeats it in Romans 15 and verse 26 to bring about the obedience of faith. We love people who, when they come, we love it when people come to obedience. Now, in New Zealand, this is no easy task. New Zealand is steadily becoming an irreligious country. As you can see on the chart here, back in 1991, about 70% of the population claimed some form of Christianity. I'm using that word rather loosely, and so that would include those of the variety of denominational persuasions, but you understand what I'm saying. Only about 20% would claim to have no religious affiliation whatsoever. I say only, but you know, that's still quite a big number, but again, you understand what I'm saying. Well, there's been a steady decrease over the years of those who are claiming to have a Christian affiliation and a steady increase in those who are claiming to have no religious affiliation whatsoever. By about 2017, we'll probably be level pegging as far as percentages are concerned, and then we will be outnumbered. We'll be in the minority. Another thing that is kind of concerning, in that in the last 12 years, those of the Eastern New Age religious persuasion, they have grown by about 73% in the last 12 years. Those of the Muslim persuasion have grown by 95% in the last 12 years. Thankfully, they are still comparatively few in number. I think we only have something in the mid-20,000s as far as the Muslim community is concerned. But growth of those of that magnitude kind of makes you prick your ears up and you pay attention to that. So that could be a concerning factor in the years to come. Not only are we up against it religiously and sort of with religious apathy and religious disinterest, we're also up against it in the moral fabric of our society. And this is largely due to some of the laws that our governing authorities have put in place. You will see that New Zealand has legalized homosexuality. That's been in place for, I think, a couple of decades now. Prostitution is now seen as a legitimate career move that ladies can make. It's seen as a legitimate career in New Zealand. They've lowered the consent age for physical intimacy to the age of 16. They also lowered the drinking age to 18. A girl of any age, and I mean any age, can go into a clinic and receive contraceptives and can get an abortion without parental consent, in fact, without even parental knowledge. Mum and dad don't even have to know what's going on for that operation to be done. Of all the things that they've allowed in New Zealand, one of the things that they have tried to prevent by bringing in the anti-smacking law. And essentially this means that parents who want to utilise a valid form of discipline are now seen as lawbreakers in New Zealand. A thing called a civil union was introduced into New Zealand. This is where individuals who don't want to make a commitment to be married can form a union by which they get all the rights and privileges of those who are married. New Zealand was one of the first countries to so-called redefine marriage, as if that can really legitimately be done, but they've tried anyway. And so now, instead of marriage being seen as exclusively a union between a man and a woman, now those of the same gender can get together, and that is considered a marriage in New Zealand. As you can imagine, with these kind of laws put in place, there are going to be some negative social consequences. Well, that is certainly borne out by these statistics. In 2010, almost half of the children that were born to unwed parents. In 2013, 25% of all couples were simply living together. They weren't bothering to make any kind of commitment to one another in the form of marriage. Almost 50% of New Zealand marriages end in divorce. And of all the marriages in 2013, almost a third of them were remarriages. And you can pretty much guarantee that the vast majority of those remarriages were not for acceptable biblical conditions. What's not on there is also some of the statistics that I could probably spend the whole evening talking about, the negative statistics that alcohol brings to New Zealand, and how people, even in the church, try to promote and defend the drinking of alcoholic beverages is beyond me. It causes so much damage, so much affliction, so much family trauma. If it was up to me, I'd ban the whole lot together. But you know, sadly, it's a very negative influence upon our country and upon our work for the church. There's a lot of baggage that we often have to wade through before someone's able to obey the gospel. Now, despite the difficulties, despite the fact that a lot of those things that were on the previous slide would probably be considered hate speech to preach against, despite the religious disinterest that seems to be increasing in our country, we need to strive to keep on keeping on. As Paul would say, you know, you yourselves, brethren, you know about our coming to you, that it wasn't in vain, that you know, we had the boldness in our God to speak to you the gospel of God amidst much opposition. And so, you know, I'm no prophet, but I can foresee a time where our preaching from pulpits like this one is going to be in the midst of much opposition. But we need to have spiritual backbones and continue to call sin, sin, and to continue to preach that the purity of the gospel. And I would like to think that this is what we're going to be striving to do in Palmerston North, New Zealand. And hopefully here in Athens, Alabama, this is what you're going to be doing as well. Despite the difficulties, we have had victories. We have had baptisms in New Zealand. In the last 4 years, we have had, or at least the last time we visited here, we've had 10 baptisms. And they are few and far between, but we rejoice and celebrate each one that comes our way. And these are some of the new converts that have been reached in Palmerston North. And those two at the bottom there, David and Jackie Pumata, they were reached during our door-knocking campaign earlier on in the year. And so all those hours and doors of that we spent knocking and the hours of labour were well worth it during those 2 weeks that we've reached this couple. These charts here show you some of the attendance and worship statistics for the congregation. And you'll see that our congregation at present is now around about 62, 63 when we left to come over here. Now, when you look at these figures, you might be seeing, as you look at the lines on those charts, you might think, wow, man, in this period of time, there doesn't seem to be a lot of progress that is made. And at best, it seems like there's only been sideways movement. You know, what's been going on? And, you know, but those charts don't really give you the full picture of the work that's been engaged in Palmerston North. What those charts don't show is that in the last 8 years, we've had 84 individuals that have either moved away, fallen away, or passed away from the Palmerston North congregation. And you don't have to be a mathematician to see that if less than half of those remained, we'd have a congregation over 100. What also you don't necessarily pick up from these charts is that those brethren who have moved away to other locations have taken the grounding in the faith that they have received at Palmerston North, and they are now benefiting other congregations through that. We've had a couple of men who have attended preacher training schools that are now working with other congregations to build them up. My brother had a hand in planting a congregation. It's kind of an offshoot of the Palmerston North work in the town of Foxton. And so they have somewhere between 15 to 20 individuals who would have really would have been meeting at Palmerston North if it wasn't for that congregation. And so sometimes these charts don't always paint the full story as to the work that's gone on and the influence that a congregation has had in other areas. Well, again, you might see the numbers. Well, they've only had 10 baptisms and the congregation's not that big. And, you know, and you might even think of your own labors. And you might think, well, you know, we wish we were growing more. We wish we had more baptisms. And sometimes we can get a bit dispirited and discouraged. But I think that when it comes to that kind of thinking, we need to ask ourselves, what is our primary task as the church? What is our primary task as Christians? Let me tell you this, it is not to convert or baptize anyone. That is not our primary task as Christians. You might be scratching your head and say, well, hold on a minute, I thought that was our main task. Well, it isn't. And let me show you scripturally why. In 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 17, Paul would say that Christ did not send him to baptize, but to what? But to preach. What was Paul's primary focus? It was simply to preach. We see in Acts chapter 16, when Lydia and her household came to the church. By the way, I'm not minimizing the importance of baptism, because you can see here that Lydia and her household were indeed baptized. But what was Paul's role in Lydia's conversion? Well, we see that the Lord opened her heart to respond to the gospel, and Lydia had to choose to respond to the gospel. What part did Paul play? Well, he spoke the gospel to Lydia, but the rest was up to the Lord and to Lydia herself. Again, in 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 8, Paul would say, I planted, Apollos watered, but who caused the growth? Not Paul, not Apollos. It was God that caused the increase. So what am I saying? What I'm saying is that our primary task as the church, our primary task as Christians, is to simply sow the seed, is to evangelize. The rest is down to God and his influence through the word and an individual's own choice, the willing hearts of individuals who hear the gospel. And again, I believe as we look at the scriptures and how things bear out, as we see the conversions within the New Testament, I believe that process bears it out. It did in Thessalonica, that it was God who was performing his work through the gospel. It was up to the Thessalonians to receive and accept the message. What was Paul doing? He was the one who gave them the word. He shared the message with them. And so our task is to simply give people opportunities, is to give them a chance. Beyond that, if we see church growth, if we see baptisms, well, that comes as a bonus. But as long as we are sharing our faith and sowing the seed in our community, God is pleased with our efforts. And that's the business that we need to be about as the church and as Christians. And we have tried our best to sow the seed throughout the Palmerston North community. And so we've had outreach efforts and campaigns. We have letterboxed almost 30,000 pamphlets. We have knocked on 2,500 doors during our recent campaign. We've had several community-invited gospel meetings and seminars. We've had dozens of Bible studies in people's homes. And we've done a variety of other things in our city to try to get the message out into the community, to sow the seed and to fulfill that responsibility that the Lord has put upon our shoulders. So that was the external focus of our work. And I just want to briefly touch on the internal focus of our work. That we would have, it's one part of our work to try to encourage people to become members of the church, but we also need to focus on the members of the church. And we will do this by engaging in sound biblical teaching in our sermons and in our Bible classes. And so we will utilize various tools that people have put together and use their wisdom and their ideas to teach the brethren. We try to put together teaching outlines and worksheets that people can fill out during class, take home with them for their own personal Bible study. And this picture down here shows you the inside of one of our kids' classrooms. And this here is one of the members of our leadership. His name is Malcolm, and he's there doing a sermon on one of our Sundays before we came over. And one of the things that I've really tried to get the men to do is to be involved actively in the preaching and the teaching within the congregation. And so I'm not the only one who does sermons and teaches classes. The other men are engaged in this on a regular basis, which helps the congregation to develop a confidence in the other men within the leadership that they can hear what they're teaching and know that they're solid in the Word. And also it means that I can come over here for my family for 3 months and know that the congregation's in good hands because the other men are being actively involved in the teaching process. Not only that, not only are we teaching as part of our internal focus, but also we're trying to fortify the fellowship and the family atmosphere within the congregation. We try to spend as much time together as we can, and we'll have activities where we dress up in goofy costumes and just have a bunch of fun together. We have an annual family camp where we gather together and spend a whole weekend in tents and have good lessons and good fun activities. We will have times where we spend with each other in each other's homes. We invite people into our homes for meals on a regular basis. We go to other people's homes on a regular basis. I would encourage you to do that more often. That if there are people in this congregation that you haven't had in your home for a meal, you need to do that. Invite yourselves over to their homes and have a meal. I think that it's something that you don't really get to know a person when you're in a big gathering, but when you have an intimate time where you can sit down and have a meal, maybe just four or five of you, that's when you really get to know a person. And that's when the questions and maybe someone's struggles are more readily apt to come out. And you can really get to know someone and help someone out. And so I'd encourage you to maybe utilize having meals in people's homes on a more regular basis if you're not doing so already. One of the other things that we host in Palmerston North is an annual ladies' challenge or a ladies' retreat. And in fact, this past weekend, we've just had it in Palmerston North. And we generally have a visiting speaker come over and speak during those weekends. And the ladies are just really, really encouraged and built up because of that. And so we really try to promote a family nucleus within the congregation. And I think that's, in a way, that's also an evangelistic tool, because when visitors from the community come, they love to see, man, this is a family here. This is a close-knit congregation. We want some of that. You know, as you saw on some of the previous slides, the family fabric of our nation is crumbling. And perhaps you can have a similar experience of that here in America. People want a family to be part of, because the families that they are in, part of in the world are not meeting that need. We want to strive to meet that need within our congregation. This is our current leadership. These are individuals that are involved in a leading way within the congregation. They're not elders, but we do hope that within the years to come, at least some of these men will be able to step up to the plate and be elders. At the moment, we're very young leadership. I'm 42 and I'm the second oldest. Most of us have young children that are yet to sort of come to the point of having a mature belief and obedience. And so it may be several years down the track, but I believe we have great potential to have an eldership in place. And we are constantly bringing this up as a goal for our congregation and as a goal for the men of the congregation to work towards that. Now, whatever labours and service that we do within the church, again, whether it's here in Athens, Alabama, or Palmy, New Zealand, we need to be about the work and working hard. That we're going to be steadfast in the truth, we're going to be immovable in our faith, and we're going to be always abounding in the work of the Lord. And if we are abounding in service, then we can know that our faith is not in vain, our labours are not in vain, that the Lord is pleased with us. Galatians 6 and verse 9 will tell us, you know, do not grow weary in well-doing, for in due time there will be a reaping, there will be a harvest. We just need to keep on doing the work and positive results will come. And so I want to assure you that we're going to be abounding in the work of the Lord in Palmerston North, and that we can try to emulate the labours that go on with our sister congregations over here. I just want to spend the last two slides just in a word of thanks. This is the local congregation in Palmerston North, and I want you to be aware that the Palmhurst North congregation is well aware of congregations like yourself that play a part in our work. They know that, that my labours probably wouldn't be quite as effective if it wasn't for the financial assistance, the prayer support, the moral support that we receive from congregations like yourself. And so the brethren back in New Zealand are very, very thankful for the part that you play in our labours back home. And just finally, I want to thank you on behalf of my family. Thank you for the warm welcome that we have received. And we wish we could be here for longer. It's only going to be a short visit, but we're thankful for the brief time that you have afforded us to be here this evening, to be able to share what we've been able to do in our labours. And just to finish off, I want to encourage you, those of you who are here and are Christians, I'll just go back a few slides. You know, if you haven't been abounding in the work of the Lord, shame on you. If you are here and you are a Christian and you are enjoying the benefits of Christianity, you are enjoying the blessings of the church, you need to be working for the church. You need to be serving. I would encourage you, if you haven't been laboring as you ought to as a Christian, not only just being present or in other matters, but laboring in evangelism as well, laboring and caring for the brethren, well, you need to be repenting of that. And getting active in the Lord's church and being a worker who needs not to be ashamed when you stand before the Lord on Judgment Day, not only for your accurate Bible knowledge, but for your active service within the church. And now is as good a time as any to start changing your thinking, to changing your mindset as to the work that you do within the congregation and your faithfulness in the way that you live as a Christian. Maybe you could use the prayers of the local congregation. I've talked about the church being a family. Well, you have a family here that is wanting to help you along the way. If you're struggling, if you're needing prayers, if you're needing assistance, let the brethren know. Come forward and tell them. Maybe it's a public sin that you've been engaged in. Well, get it off your chest publicly. Again, let the church know that the church can help you along the way and can meet those struggles. If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, you know, it doesn't matter what you toil in, it doesn't matter what labors you are engaged in, how hard you work in your worldly efforts, your life will be vain if you die outside of the Lord. You will come to the Lord and you will stand before Him on Judgment Day and your life would have been worth nothing. It will have been vain. We don't want that to be true for any single person in this room tonight. If you want your life to be spiritually valuable, to be spiritually worthwhile, you need to be in the Lord. You need to be in the church. You need to be obedient to the gospel plan of salvation. There are a host of individuals in this room who would like nothing better than to show you from God's word the steps that you need to take to become a Christian. So you can know from God's word how you can be ready for the coming judgment, to be ready for the day that you depart from this world. If you have needs of any of that nature, please let the brethren know. And let us stand and sing the closing song.